All right, and welcome back to issue 25 of TLDR. I'm your friendly neighborhood backracker, Dr. Joe. And as always, with me is my hunk and crime. Together, we are the Woodward and Bernstein of the Dork Shared Gooniverse. Friar, my guy, how's it going?
The quarter century mark already.
It's a big one. That's a big one. 25, it's a big deal.
Yeah, on top of the holiday issue and the annual. And never mind, we've done all the interviews that we've done so far.
It's right.
Just one of those minor, one of the minor moments where we can kind of reflect on everything that we've done. But it's, I always get thrown off when you say the number at the beginning of the show. I just don't even think about it like that. It feels like we've been doing it longer than we have, but it's also hard to believe how long we've been doing it for, if that makes sense. I don't know if it does. I don't give a shit if it does. Before we get into what's new this week, have you caught up on anything recently? I personally haven't, because the book I was reading for this week was just came out last week, actually.
Yeah, so whereas last week I didn't read anything, this week I read a ton, I think. And a good part of that is I had two less reviews I had to write this week for Geeks Worldwide, so I had some extra time. So I caught up on a lot of goodies. So Unkindness of Ravens, number 5, came out. That's sort of ending what I believe to be the first arc. I got a feeling this is going to continue. But this was a really fun series. I really enjoyed that. Star Wars Adventures, Smuggler's Run, number 2, from IDW. I finished that. That was only a two-book run. That was fun. It was just a nice little Star Wars story. So it took place right before the events of Empire Strikes Back. American Ronin, number 4, from AWA. This series just continues to kick ass.
Before you go further on that, or Dune, which I know you have next, with Star Wars Adventures, again, I've talked about it before on here. I think I those are definitely generally more kid oriented.
Yep.
Did this end up feeling like it was mainly just for kids, or it could appeal to everybody?
It would appeal to any Star Wars fan. It was just a good, fun Star Wars story. You know, was it, over the top, violent or anything like that? And the language obviously wasn't, adult or anything like that, but it wasn't childish either. The art wasn't very childish. The story, it was just a good Star Wars story, and with it only being 2 issues, definitely a fun little read, quick read. And like I said, it takes place right before the events, where we pick things up in the beginning of Empire. So not bad. I would definitely recommend that one.
Okay, nice. Anything else?
So yeah, American Ronin, like I said, that continues to be a great series. There's only one book left in that, which I'm hoping is just the ending of a first arc and not ending of the series in general. But Dune, House of Atreides, number 4, came out. That continues to be another great story, learning more about the world of Dune. There's a lot of different things going on there. That's been fun to read. I remember last week I talked about We Only Find Them When They're Dead, number 5, and I said I only read a couple of, and I could close it. I ended up going back, reading it, and was in a much better mood. I enjoyed it very much. It was just, it was cranky last week. So this wrapped up it, it ended at issue number 5, but I believe it's going to continue on, because I think it had the to be continued down at the bottom there. So that was good. Nailbiter Returns, number 9, continues to be a great series. We finally got a big reveal in this issue that I was kind of waiting for. And then a couple of number 1s that I've been wanting to read. One is The Last Witch, number 1. This one came out a couple of weeks ago, and this is from Boom, or sort of an offshoot of Boom called Boombox, which is typically geared towards young adults. But again, while the art was a little more cartoony, it didn't feel like I was reading a kid's book. It was a really good comic. And that was really great. I think The Last Witch, number 2, comes out next week. And then about a month ago, because Man's World number 2 came out today. So I read Man's World number 1 from AWA Studios. And that one was absolutely fantastic. The premise of it essentially is it's in the future. There's 4 guys. One of them is recently divorced, so his buddies take him to this sort of resort planet, where they can kind of, do all the things that guys like to do. And one of the characters is an MMA fighter, and he's got a real hot head, and he gets the guys in a bit of trouble. And that's sort of how the first book ends. So the second issue came out today. I'll talk about that in a moment. But that's everything I caught up on. Like I said, in addition to all the stuff I read for this week, I read a lot of stuff from the, you know, the past couple of weeks. So it was nice to catch up.
Jeez, that is a lot of catching up, Joe. My God. And there's still a ton of stuff that came out this week too, as we go to What's New. And just a reminder, What's New is brought to you by Rogue Grips. Use promo code FRIAR, F-R-I-A-R, for 25% off your first order. Of course, DC, we've been talking about them quite a bit. We're doing our tie-ins at the end of the week on Fridays, usually around noon, sometimes around 1. Either way, we've been talking about all those books. Then I know I'm reviewing the next Batman. The third issue came out this week, and I very much enjoyed that one. And they've been doing a really good job with it. The ending was I'm not one where it's like I gotta have a crazy ending to bring me back, and so that the entire book is good and then the ending is solid and does justice, I'm fine. The ending in this one was really what did it for me. So I'm very excited to see how things wrap up. Of course, this is one of the titles that we're expecting to see have more beyond Future State. And I know for myself, Harley Quinn issue 2 is out this week, which I didn't like the first one. So we'll see where that second one goes. And then Wonder Woman 2 is also out this week.
Yeah. So I read Superman of Metropolis number 2, also reviewed that for Geeks Worldwide. Sorry, let me turn that down. And so that was only a 2-book arc, and I thought Sean Lewis did a great job with that. Enjoyed it very much. I haven't read Flash number 2 yet. That came out this week, and Swamp Thing number 2 came out, and that one I did enjoy. I did read that one. Like I said, the first book, read it. Wasn't sold on it until the very end, and then book 2 just got right into it and told a very interesting story. I think the writer, Ram V, is someone that I should read more of his stuff, because he's a very interesting writer. So that one was definitely worth checking out, and I enjoyed reading it.
Okay, nice. Also this week we had the final issue of Constantine Rise and Fall come out, and I mean, my review's up on Geeks Worldwide. I thought, you know, is this something I'll do an episode on fully for TLDR? As much as, because with these Black Label stories, as much as they're 3-issue miniseries, they're also extended issues. They're like 40 pages plus. And I thought about it. I don't think I'm going to be able to. I liked it quite a bit, but the way things ended, it was a solid ending, but I don't know. The thing is that I went in with expectations because it's Tom Taylor, and I expect him to take a different route, and it's Constantine, and I know he can, you know, you can do certain things with that character. And there are different ways that writers have gone with Constantine. And I don't think that Taylor necessarily went the wrong way. I just think, okay, you're Tom Taylor. You operate in the darkness very well. You are very grim. Why not kind of like really go another level with Constantine? And don't get me wrong, there is that, but I also felt like there, you know, Constantine, you can get weird too, and there is a difference between the grim and the weird. I have no problem, you know, having the weird elements in there. I just it was more that than anything, and that was kind of my hang up with this. So it's not that I don't recommend the book to everybody, but I have a tough time devoting an entire episode to that, where I look at it and I know I gave it some high marks in the first 2 issues. I didn't hate the third one. I think I gave it an 8 out of 10, but I wanted more. So
here's an idea. Why don't I get my hands on it? Mm. I read it's 3 issues, right?
Yeah.
I'll read it because we're coming from different spectrums of the Constantine fandom. Right. Mm-hmm. You being a well-read Constantine fan, and I, you know, have only had just a taste. Why don't I get my hands on it, read it, and then we give it the 3 Jokers treatment, where at the end of one of our issues, we spend a few minutes talking about it.
I love the sound of that. That would be great. So whenever we should definitely do that at some point. And it's going to be a while before that trade comes out anyway. So maybe when that comes out, we'll try and do it around then, so people know if they want to pick that up. Also out with Deep from DC this week, Man Bat issue 1. I don't know if I have no intention of reading it, but I want to make sure it's on everybody's radar. And then Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey issue 4. This is a Black Label book. I remember reading the first issue and I thought it was solid, but I didn't, it wasn't enough to keep me going forward. But if you like the movie, if you like Harley Quinn or whatever, the first one was good. So the trade is probably not far away. Marvel this week, Joe, Star Wars, The High Republic issue 2. I know you mentioned Smuggler's Run. I really enjoyed the first issue of The High Republic. I'm going to be reading the second issue as well. Also, King in Black, Black Knight issue 1 is coming out. And I know we joke about the tie-ins and all that stuff for King in Black, because obviously like there's Gwenom versus Carnage 2, which I said I was going to read that. I didn't end up reading the first one, so I don't know. We'll see. But I kind of think I want to read the Black Knight stuff because I don't know. It's just this is a character we're going to see more coming up. So Maybe it's time. Maybe I should pick this up. But also the Legend of Shang-Chi issue 1 is out. They just had a Shang-Chi run. I don't know why they have a different title again already. But this one features Lady Deathstrike. And also, we've had people in the past ask us about books for kids. And I know you had to address it with, I think it was what, for a younger daughter. But for just kids in general, if they're trying to get into comics or whatever, and they're younger, we're talking, I would say, 5, 6, maybe 8 range. I don't know. I don't have kids, so I have a tough time gauging this stuff. Avengers Mech Strike, I believe is what it was. Issue 1 is out this week. It's basically, I don't know if it's, the superheroes are turned into Transformers, or if they're the heroes are in Transformer like armor, like Zords or something to that effect. But it looked like something that kids of all ages, or kids, boys or girls, would probably enjoy to some extent. So I just wanted to put that in everybody's radar. What came out from IDW this week?
So a lot from IDW this week. So I wrote. So Sea of Stars, this is not Sea of Stars. It's supposed to be Sea of Sorrow, because I always get the two mixed up because they sound so fucking similar. But Sea of Sorrow number 3 came out this week. That's been a really good series. Another Star Wars book, Star Wars High Republic number 1.
So this is this. It's like I saw this. It's because that's the same thing that I'm reading from Marvel. Yes. They have. I don't know how they're different, but there is a slightly different slant.
Yeah, so I haven't read either of those yet, but I look forward to reading that. Canto number 2, Canto 2, The Hollow Men number 5 came out this week. That ends up this particular arc. I read Canto, the first one, absolutely loved it. I haven't read these ones yet because this is one that I like to read all the way through. So I will, now that it's out, I'll read issues 1 through 5 altogether. It's a great little fantasy story. And then another book I'm excited to read. I just didn't get a chance to read it yet. Number 1 from IDW called Chained to the Grave.
Oh
yeah. So there's a couple of good horror books, coming out this week. And that looks, to be, one of the goodies.
So before we go on to the other stuff that came out this week, so is Canto a horror book as well?
No, it's a fantasy book.
You said fantasy. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that something you need to do an episode on? Because I've never heard of that one before.
Yeah, I was going to wait until I read the second arc.
Okay.
Here before I did that. Because I remember when I did Nailbiter, I did the first run of Nailbiter, and then the second, Nailbiter Returns, it just started coming out. And so where I could talk about those books separately, I kind of, lumped them all in together, and I'll probably do the same thing here. Instead of talking about them separately, I'll just lump those two arcs in together.
Solid.
But it's been a lot of fun.
Okay. Now what about AWA? I think I know you said you read Man's World 1 this week, but isn't the second out this week?
Yep. Man's World 2, came out, today. So I'm looking, depending on when you're listening to this is Wednesday. So that came out this week, and another book, number 1 from AWA, which I'm excited to read, Redemption number 1. And, for those watching, I've got it right here. It looks pretty badass.
Okay.
I will see if I can get it. Oh, that's pretty good.
Okay. Yeah.
A little Western horror vibe to it. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to reading that. There's been some buzz around that book, as well. So
who we're familiar with?
No, not that I'm familiar. Krista Faust, Mike Dodato Jr., and Lee Lurage. So the names I'm not familiar with.
Nope, I don't know any of those names. That's for damn sure. Okay. What about Vault? And then I think you got a couple other issue ones that came out this week, but not from Vault.
Yeah. So Vault, Resonant number 7, issue 7 came out this week. So Resonant is a great, it's been a great book. And I'm, again, this is another one I've got to do an issue on, because it's got, it's not a horror book, but it's got sort of like, it's, again, I don't want to call it a post-apocalyptic book, and I don't want to call it a horror book, but it definitely skews a little bit close, because it's, it definitely takes place at a time where there's some weird shit going on, and there's these there's this swarm that attacks and kills people if they're not, you know, indoors, and a lot of crazy shit happens, and it's a really well written book. We don't talk a lot of Vault on this show, but this is definitely one of the books from Vault that is I think is must read. So issue 7 came out. I can't wait to read that one because it's been a good story so far. And then if you want, I can just, rattle off the rest of these number ones here.
Before you do that, I did want to mention that the new issue, the final issue of the 8th by Adam Lawson, which I talked to him about before TLDR was even a thing. I talked to him about that. That's available on the Change My Mind audio channel, I believe on Geeks Worldwide. You're going to have to dig a little bit more over there though to find that one. And the final issue that came out this week, I believe there are ways that you can get that and also get the Kill Journal, even though the 8th campaign is technically over. It's all over on Indiegogo, but, you know, search for the Kill Journal. And I know the second issue of that came out as well. We'll definitely talk about that when that series ends. Because you're reading it as you go along with the Kill Journal. Yeah. I wanted to wait till I get the hard copy book of it because that thing is so badass. And, you know, there's the whole binging it versus you just, you know, waiting periodically with some people. You know, I don't care about one way or the other. Binging it is pretty awesome, but I just the book just looks so cool that I kind of want to experience reading it with that. So, yeah. But we'll talk about that at some point. But if we talked to Adam about that one as well. That was after our first interview with Scott Snyder. So I don't know. I can't remember what month, back in
October, November, around
yeah,
there.
Sounds about right. Yeah, that would make sense. That would make sense. So, but anyways, those are out this week. Now you got a few issue ones that you wanted to tell me about before we get into your book.
Yep. So, from Image, the number one that came out this week is Deep Beyond number one. I got about halfway through that one this morning. That is written by Mirka Andolfo. So far it starts off fucking humming, man. This is going to be a good book. Surprising she doesn't do the art. She's just the writer on this book. Typically she does the writing and the art, just the writing credit for her, but the art is very good. This is going to be a hell of a book. And then from Boom, Luna number one came out. And so I read this thing. This book is fucking weird, man. It is, the art is, it takes place in the 60s. It's got a very 60s hippies cult vibe to it. Mm-hmm. And so at first, it starts off with, you know, a bit of a mystery. Then it gets a little weird, gets a little sexual, and then kind of ends with, I don't know if it's going to be like a vampire book or something, but it's got that the way it ends, man. It's kind of got that feel to it. So I wasn't sold on this book. I was like, okay, this is, you know, it's a good book, not my cup of tea. And then the way it ends. Oh yeah. Give me issue number two. I can't wait.
Okay. You see, when you started talking about the sexual stuff in there, I was like, wait a minute. Did you just talk about Mirka Andolfo's book? I got confused.
Yeah. And then lastly, the last number one that came out this week, I fucking love. So from Dark Horse, Fear Case number one came out. And this is written by Matt Kint. I've talked about him before when I talked about the book Bang. There's another book that he wrote, Folklords. And so he definitely has a very distinct style. And what I'm getting the feeling of is that his books, he likes to connect them all in some way, like sort of like how Stephen King sort of connects all his books. So when I talked about Bang, it was about, you had all these different, characters. One was a spy, one was, you know, I can't remember, you know, they all had sort of like different professions, but what was sort of neat about it was that there was this writer, Philip Verb, who was writing all their stories, and they all sort of came together in the same reality. Whereas in this, it's about two FBI agents who only have a few weeks left to solve a case that they've been working on. And when agents are given this particular case, they're only given 1 year to work on it because it consumes them. And it's about this box and no one knows what's in it, but it predates a lot of stuff. And there's a panel where the two partners are in a car, and it's like an anniversary of when they first started the case. And in the book, that one of the characters gives the other, his partner, is a book written by Philip Verve, who was the author of the books from Bang. So there's a connection there. The art is vastly different, but it seems like he likes to connect his stuff, which is a really cool thing. So that book was great, and I can't wait to keep reading that one.
Funny, you bring up Dark Horse at the end of it there, and I know you have a Dark Horse book planned for this week, and it's one that I've been waiting for you to talk about for a while, because I remember you told me about this when we had this writer on, and I was thinking, oh, you know, like I want to get on this, but then you're like, no, I'm going to review it, and I was thinking about doing it for or talking about it for Dorktober. But we've moved it up a little bit in time, just in time for Valentine's Day season, which I think is a great call on your part. Want to tell everybody what you're talking about?
So I am talking about Harrow County from Cullen Bunn. So we interviewed Cullen again back in November, and we had a great conversation with him. I would definitely recommend going back and taking a listen to that interview, because it was a lot of fun. He was great to talk to, and at the end, one of the things that you know, Nick's been doing with these interviews, and it's a great question, is he asks the writers, you know, if you were to recommend a book to someone who's unfamiliar with your work, what would you pick? And he said, unapologetically, two books, The Sixth Gun and Harrow County. So I did The Sixth Gun the week that we dropped his interview on Change My Mind podcast. And you know what? It's the month for love, and I'm saying, you know what? It's also going to be the month for horror.
Someone argue the same thing, but they're definitely
One of the same, six in one hand, half dozen in the other. But I think it was last week or the week before. You said, when are you going to do Harrow County? And I said, you know, I'll do it now. You know, leading in, especially what I'll be talking about next week, but. Harrow County was written by Cullen Bunn. The artist is Tyler Crook, and the letterer is also Tyler Crook. I wrote Cook, but it's Crook. I couldn't find a colorist anywhere. I'm assuming it's also Tyler, but yeah. So this is a much different type of horror book, right? When the book that I'll be talking about next week is, it's a doozy. But this is kind of terrifying in its own right, but it's more than just, a horror book. It's also, you know, a coming of age, you know, story. And so, Harrow County ran for 32 issues. So for an indie book, that's a good run.
That's a really good run.
And so the story takes place in this sort of rural farm, you know, town, this rural community that kind of, you know, gives the vibes of, you know, early, you know, mid 1900s, you know, that sort of time. It doesn't really give you a time frame for when it takes place, but, you know, through the art and, you know, the way the characters look and talk and stuff like that, that's sort of the vibe, that it gives you. It could be much earlier than that, but right around that turn of the century there. And what the story revolves around is a witch that was a part of this community. And she was allowed to, you know, be a part of the community because she would heal the townsfolk, you know. Right. So they sort of overlooked the fact that she was a witch because she could help, you know, heal their wounds, maybe keep them from dying. You know, it was like, okay, you do a lot of weird shit, but it's okay, right? But eventually, you know, over time, the weird shit's really started to, you know, add up. So, you know, livestock would start dying in her presence. Yes.
Okay. No, I was going to say, like, at some point, was it just becoming, it was things that were not okay when you say the weird stuff. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, livestock would now start dying, you know, more frequently, would start just dropping dead, you know, be dropping dead in her presence. She would, you know, two of the things that really were the straws that broke the camel's back was that she would be taking the, you know, the town's children to this weird reservoir and do baptisms and have sermons. And then one of the, you know, the panels, you know, the little word dialogue panels, you know, as it's sort of breaking this, you know, down as to why they decided to get rid of her was she would have blasphemous congress with heinous creatures in the woods. So I'll, you know, leave that up to interpretation for what you think blasphemous congress.
Okay.
Right. But they had enough. And so it was time, you know, the townsfolk said it's time, you know, we got to get rid of the witch. So they decided, you know, the only way to get rid of her is we got to kill her. And they tried shooting her, you know, stabbing her, hanging her, and none of those things worked. So they finally strung her up and set her on fire.
Right. That's what happens, right?
Yeah.
Either you drown them or you burn them. Those are the only two things, right? That's how it works with witches. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, they did it in this very, you know, old oak tree. And as she was, you know, dying, she vowed that she would return one day.
Ooh.
Right. And so the townsfolk, they were all fucking spooked as shit, you know. And so that's sort of how the book begins. And then, you know, that tree that, you know, that she died on looms large as a very large presence, you know, in this story. And so we kind of fast forward and the tree is on a farm and we get introduced to our main character. Her name is Emmy and she's 17 and her birthday, her 18th birthday, it's coming up. And as her 18th birthday is approaching, some weird shit starts to happen. She starts having nightmares about this tree. Her dad's a farmer, you know, some of the cows get very sick suddenly. And so some weird things are happening. And so as she's, you know, checking on the baby calves, which appear to be dead, she suddenly is able to, it's suddenly walking again in her presence when she kind of put her hand on its head and said, "You're going to be okay." It's like a miracle. It gets up and starts walking again. And her old man has this look of like, oh shit, you know, you know, on his face. And he doesn't really explain anything. You could just kind of see it there. And then as book one ends, I'm only really going to, you know, talk about sort of book one, because I feel like I can give shit away. Right.
Yeah. You would never do something like that.
No, never. No. But the way book one ends is that, you know, she's just going for a walk in the woods and she sees this little boy and she, you know, he looks lost. She starts following him and he's sort of leading her through the woods. And when she finally catches up to him, it's sort of in like this bramble bush. And all that's there is skin, this little boy's skin. It's hanging there and it's not really talking to her, but it's like making some like moaning noises. And you go on to learn that there's these dark creatures that inhabit the woods, and they're known as haints, which are like spirits.
Haints?
Haints. H-A-I-N-T-S. Haint.
Okay.
Haint. Like taint, but with an H.
I wasn't going to say it. I just wanted to make sure that I was hearing you correctly. Okay.
Okay. Got it. And so it's a really, really creepy image. And it's kind of like...
Yeah, be it haint or taint,
And what does Emmy do? She takes it. And she brings it back home with her. And as the rest of the first volume goes, and as the rest of the story goes, she bonds, you know, with this. She's not scared of it. Like, as say I would be, I would have shit my pants and absolutely run in the opposite direction. You know, but she embraces it because she feels as though it, you know, this soul, this thing needs, needs help, needs guidance, and they bond. And so what transpires after this is really fascinating. And the twists and the turns and where it goes is really something else. And you get to learn about more of the history of Emmy, of her parents, of the town. Some really weird, creepy shit happens with the town. And then, like I said, it's 32 issues, man. So I haven't even finished the whole series yet. You know, I'm almost done the whole thing, but what I've read so far, it gets better and better and better. And one of the things I wanted to, you know, talk about is that, you know, usually, you know, what drives a good comic book, right, is story and characters. Like, comics can get away if the art isn't always top notch, right? And there's been very few instances where art has really, like, taken away from a book so much that we wanted to stop reading it. But, you know, if the story's good enough, if the characters are good enough, and the art's just okay, you'll keep reading because it's got all the other elements there.
Well, but I also don't often pick up books that I don't like the art. Like, right. Black Hammer, I've had a tough time picking it up because that art isn't necessarily for me as much as it sounds like a good story.
Right. But if you were to, you know, say, okay, let me give this book a chance first. And if it's able to pull you in with the story and the characters, you'll keep reading it, you know, if the art is just kind of like meh or not your cup of tea.
Well, yeah, like Die's not necessarily, like, generally the art from Die is not my style. Like, if the book I'm talking about this week, Falcon and Winter Soldier, had Die's artwork, I wouldn't like it. But it fits the story, right. So I'm cool with it. It works. It's good.
Right. So the point I'm trying to make is with horror books and the horror genre is that art is essential, mm-hmm. right? You know, and sometimes it's the art that tells more of a story than the actual dialogue, you know, and some of the characters. And what Harrow County does is it really combines, you know, those two things together so well. So the art in this, there's panels where there isn't any dialogue. It's just Tyler Crook's art, and he's got this beautiful watercolor, you know, effect going to his art, and it's haunting and terrifying. And you combine that with Cullen's story, and this is just, it's able to terrify you on so many different, you know, fronts, you know, but it's like I said before, it's more than just a horror book because, you know, the character of Emmy, she's a very interesting, strong, well-written character. And it's just as much about her journey trying to figure out what the hell is going on as it is like giving you that imagery of this is fucked up, you mm-hmm. know, and this is taunting, this is terrifying. You know, the concept of it is this, I mean, she's not a young girl, but she's growing into womanhood and adulthood, but she's carrying around this
sack of skin
that talks to her, you know. It's a bananas concept. But
well, that was one thing I wanted to ask you about was the age, because I didn't think you had mentioned it, her age. So she's what, like high school age essentially?
Oh, I said in the beginning she's 17 and her 18th birthday is approaching, so all this stuff
that's
starting to happen now is you know in large part because she's you know, she's coming, you know, she's, you know, reaching that age of 18, and you learn to find out, you know, later on that, you know, it's got to do, you know, with the witch and mm-hmm. the tree. And so all that unfolds, and it's so fun to read, and the story is great. And Cullen, he's a tremendous writer, but I love the artwork in this book. I absolutely love it.
I saw him campaigning for his Magneto series to come back, which I have read. So I'll need to talk about that on here somewhere because I did like that. That was, I think, 4 trades. But he was campaigning for it with the idea of Magneto possibly popping up in WandaVision or whatever. Somebody's, you know, out there writing about that. But the other thing that I did want to ask you too was, I think I kind of got confused because you talked about Luna and where that time frame was. So I understand that this was essentially the witch burning was in like the Puritan times or whatever, colonial times, right? Like we're talking Salem witch trial times.
No, yeah. So the time frame from when the witch dies,
right,
to where we are now is, I believe, that 17 years, because the townsfolk that killed the witch are some of the townsfolk that, as the story unfolds and as you read it,
oh,
yeah, Yeah, so it's not like this was like, oh, this happened way back then, and then this girl is born, and then as she gets close to her 18th birthday, no, the time frame is relatively close to each other.
Oh, got it. Okay.
And it just happens to be like, I feel like that time frame is like, you know, late 1800s, early, you know, 1900s, somewhere in that time frame. It doesn't give you a time, but that's sort of what it feels like.
Got it. Okay. Now, without giving anything away, if it does either way, I understand. With the witch, like, I don't know how much more we see of her. Again, I'm sure you deal with her in some capacity, obviously, based on the way you're talking about it. But do you look at her like, do you have sympathy for this character, seeing what happened to her? Because like this weird stuff that happened with the livestock dying, obviously not ideal, but it's kind of like, all right, things are good. But then once shit goes sideways, then it's like, no, fuck that. We're done with this. As opposed to, let's try and figure out what the fuck is going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you don't have sympathy for her, but you do question, you know, the townsfolk and how they decide to, you know, deal, how they, you question how they decided to deal with it in the first place, but also how they're going to deal with what's coming ahead.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. And then the standing question, I know you're still working through this, but always, do you see this as a show, as a movie, or do you think it's just best left as a comic and leave it there?
Definitely wouldn't work as a movie, I don't think, because there's just too much going on. You know, it could work as a TV show, but honestly, this is something that I think was born to exist as a comic.
Because I like it's that.
Just, because, you know, the art, it's just, there's something about the way it's drawn, and obviously something about the way it's written. I feel like you take this story and you try to adapt it to TV, and they would just fuck it up.
Got it. Yeah, honestly, that's part of why I think I like Die as much as I do. It could get turned into a show, but it's just something that when it's just best to be where it is right now, don't turn it into anything else. Doesn't mean I'm going to say don't, like, it's not okay to do it. It's just not, the comic medium is what's best for it. I love that. That's when the writer and the artist did their job correctly. Yeah.
Speaking of which, when was the last time Die came out? When was
I don't want to talk about that.
It's been a while.
Yeah, you warned me, in fairness, going into it, that it takes time in between each issue. But last time it felt like it was a month plus. I'm sorry. It's always a month. It felt like it was like a month and a half is what it was, or 2 months.
I'm trying to remember when the last issue came out.
I mean, I know he's working on Eternals right now, but come on, don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Die doesn't sell as well as Once in Future, because he's still consistent with Once in Future, but it's also different. I'm sure, you know, business wise or company wise, Image and Boom are two run differently, and of course Marvel is as well. But anyways, I'm glad you finally talked about this, so now I can go read it. It took long enough, so I appreciate that. Anything else about your book before I move on to mine?
No, I love it. It's a must read. I gave this. I have the first two volumes. And I gave them to Keith way back when, and he loved it. And
did you get them back?
So he gave them to Shyam to give to me, because Shyam and I went golfing over the summer, but Shyam forgot to bring them. So I still have them back. But I told Keith to keep them. You know, I said, yeah, if you like it, you know, keep it. It's okay.
Oh, what a guy you are!
But it's
Shyam. If you're watching or listening, give Doc his books back. Okay. All right. But anyways, all right, moving on. So this week, so Doc went back to the indie realm. I decided to go on back to the big two, which I've been operating at primarily lately, which I'm whatever. This week Doc did Vision, or The Vision, recently. And I decided, all right, I'm going to, this Marvel book came out and we're not getting the show yet, but it's a perfect, like, reintroduction, I would think, to the characters we haven't seen in a while, mainly because of the pandemic and everything. And this is the title, the Disney Plus show I've been most excited for. I think most people have been most excited for. The show is The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Or is it Falcon and the Winter Soldier? It's Falcon and the Winter Soldier. The book is Falcon and Winter Soldier with an ampersand. Now, when this series came out, I wanted to get it right away. I was like, I'm going to pick up the first issue and read it as an ongoing series. And I think the pandemic kind of screwed that up, if I remember correctly, the way it all, because this came out last year. This was just released the week of TLDR 24, so only a week prior to us recording this episode. So it kind of worked out perfectly. I didn't have to wait a crazy long time. I think the final issue came out in November, so pretty good turnaround. I got to imagine the pandemic helped with that a little bit, because I'm sure the sales weren't as good as they should have been. This is a book. This is only five issues. The trade is only five issues. The series, it looks like, is only five issues. There's not more stuff. I don't know why that happened. I really wish that it didn't happen that way, because I thought this would be going into it. I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. And it turned out to be very good. It's written by Derek Landy, art by Federico Vicenti, colors by Matt Mala. And I don't know if it's Mala, like some people say Kevin Mala around here or whatever. But anyway,
Bill Miller.
Oh yeah, Bill Miller. But it's spelled M-I-L-L-A for what it's worth. And then the letter is Joe Carmagna. I think it's got that silent G going in there. But anyways, we're dealing with two characters who everybody knows very well. We got friggin' Falcon, Winter Soldier, former Captain America's, and I know when I first told Wes about this story, he was like, is this going to be something that gets us ready for the actual show? Is it like a prelude for it or whatever? It's definitely not, because at this point in time, this is sticking to the comics where both characters have taken on the title of Captain America. They no longer are Captain America, either one of them. They're back to who they were, which I like personally. Don't get me wrong. I think I'd rather have Sam Wilson as my Captain America versus Bucky Barnes for a couple of reasons. One of them being his outfit is friggin' bad. The Falcon Captain America outfit is friggin' outstanding. And I don't like Bucky Barnes' Captain America outfit. It's just like, especially him holding a gun. It's just, I don't have a problem with characters using guns. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm freaking Red Hood. My favorite Batman is Thomas Wayne, who uses guns. Spawn loves to use guns too. But Captain America, that's just not him, as much as he can use some spicing up every once in a while. But Winter Soldier, on the other hand, again, another character, guns, go for it. Totally fine with it. So anyways, my point is, though, these two are not, they're not, you know, taking on that role anymore. They're doing their own thing, and then they cross paths because they each have their own concerns that they're worried about, and it takes them on a similar path, and they try and figure some shit out. It's a great book for all ages. I'm sure for some younger kids, it may be a little bit tougher, but and it does get a little violent, but it's like Marvel violent. You know, we're not talking necessarily Venom violent, but there's definitely some blood, and there's actually a lot of fighting, but it's really good. It just doesn't get as intense as you might see in an indie book, which is what we expect. But I do think, as much as it's not it's definitely not like a prelude to the show, it's a good way to reintroduce yourself to the characters. More importantly, I think for Sebastian Stan, now I'm sure he's already, obviously they've already recorded the show and everything like that, and I'm sure he didn't read the book or have the opportunity to see any of this before he went and, you know, took on the character again. This is more of what I want to see out of Winter Soldier. Yes, there is some level of like remorse, I guess, for who he's been. He doesn't want to be the assassin anymore, but at the same time, he's not afraid to pull the trigger. He knows it needs to be done once in a while, and sometimes it's for the greater good. There's a difference between him and Captain America, and I don't like it when it's just the mopiness. I get it. You don't like that you killed some people that were good people. It wasn't your fault. I get it. And I'm sure a real human being would have issues with that. But there are some times where you can take liberties with this stuff when we're talking about fiction. So I just – like Bucky Barnes – you know, Wes likes to joke we have that award for the rewatches. It's the sad Bucky Barnes award for what age is the worst. I hate that it has to be that case. Like it's very warranted, but I like Winter Soldier a lot. The villain was badass, and the character is like in this book. If Sebastian Stan took the character like this, like handled it this way, everybody would like Winter Soldier way more than they do already. And because I think that's a character people want to like. I mean, is that how you feel about him?
Well, I think what would be great is if we got some Winter Soldier, Jason Bourne kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like, because he's
That's a good idea.
Because he's not afraid to pull the trigger, he knows what has to, you know, he knows what has to be done sometimes. He has that sort of militaristic, you know, background. I mean, so does a Captain America, but he's got that goody two shoes odd, you know, thing to
very
him.
Different.
But,
very different.
Very different. But if you like, if you were to like make him like a Jason Bourne type, you know, and because what one of the reasons why Winter Soldier is one of my favorite MCU movies is because it has that sort of spy thriller feel to it, right? It tells a really great story. And if you were to take Winter Soldier, you know, and sort of put him in that role of like sort of like what Jason Bourne is, and he's got these missions he has to do for S.H.I.E.L.D. or, you know, whatever, you know, the types of missions that a Captain America wouldn't do, the types of missions, you know, Iron Man wouldn't do, like not just fighting, you know, the big bads, you know, from outer space or whatever, but like, you know, really have them have to, you know, do these spy type missions, you know, going against
Hydra or whoever.
Thank you, Hydra or whomever.
Or right? AIM, yeah.
Or AIM. I think that would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well,
I don't know what the series is going to be like, but that's kind of my hope.
This book is you'll like this book. I knew right away. I figured I was going to read it. I was going to enjoy it right away. That's why I felt so confident in making that call before I, you know, opened up, you know, read a single page of it. And you know, the other thing is too, I didn't realize it. I'm surprised I didn't realize it. The cover for the trade, Dan Mora, your guy, of course.
My guy.
He's on fire. He is everywhere. So I mean, it's honestly when I saw the cover, I was like, this is freaking outstanding. And I don't know. I think it was maybe their faces just kind of threw me off a little bit because I think Mora did the coloring for this as well. And usually he's just doing the pencils and the inks. So anyways, it's outstanding work though. Anyways, so back to what I was talking about. So with this book, we meet some new characters in this. We see there's a third character we see who we've seen before, who I think people would be excited to see. If you like Falcon and the Winter Soldier, you'd be excited to see him in this book. But the new characters that we introduced, one of them is pretty good. I don't know if we'll see him again down the line again. With this only being five issues, I just don't know what happens later on. I'm really glad they're doing like they did this too, because there was a Winter Soldier run that I felt like ended pretty quickly that had some promise to it that I enjoyed. There was also another Winter Soldier series where I believe it's him and Black Widow on the cover that I own, and I believe that was it. Like it was just one arc, and it kind of had we saw elements of it pop up in. What was it in Captain America Civil War, the movie. And maybe I'll talk about that book again down the line at some point, because that one was pretty good as well. But I think this is probably my favorite Winter Soldier thing I've read so far, other than the Winter Soldier reveal in the Captain America book when that first happened, because you just don't know and
drops your jaw.
That was tremendous. Really well done. Maybe we'll talk about that down the line at some point, because there's only so much Captain America stuff you can read on it. They don't sell it. I feel like anytime I go to a comic book store that has Captain America stuff, like there's a lot of it and it doesn't sell.
Yeah.
So and it's discounted usually too. There's also in this book so I mentioned there were three characters that we see that I haven't mentioned. I'm not going to mention who. One of them that people will know very well. Two of them that are new. One of them kind of turns out to, it feels like is like a ripoff in some ways of a character from another property that we see. I don't want to go further than that. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about when you see it. And at first, like, oh, like, all right. Like, it's not, the appearance is more the ripoff than anything else. It still works. I still enjoy it. It doesn't take away from things. They kind of lean into it a little bit, but then they make a reference to another major property. And I was like, well, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It's a different. So there's two properties that they allude to and there's two major properties. I thought it was outstanding. The second one was much better than the first one. And it was just, and it caught me completely off guard. So the fifth issue of this, the final issue, quite a few laughs in it, a lot of action. There's a lot of action throughout. I think the most action is in the fifth one though. And, they keep you on your toes too, which is good. And I really enjoyed this. It's a fun read that's not really about. I mean, it's about something because there's a Captain America gets brought up, and it's just about some things. But in general, you don't. That's not really the focus. It's just a fun story.
Is it good, like buddy cop kind of?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Absolutely.
With that.
And there's still that vibe that we get from Sebastian Stan and Anthony Mackie, but I still like what we get from this Winter Soldier, the comic Winter Soldier, versus Sebastian Stan.
Gotcha.
He's got more of a personality. And I think those two are best working off of a villain or third person, just the characters in general.
Right.
Because they're not, they're obviously, they're their own people. They're not Cap, but they're just, they're not quite as dynamic. I would say I think Winter Soldier has the potential to be the most dynamic of the characters, but he's, we're talking about all three of them, including Captain America, but sometimes he doesn't, like sometimes when he gets too mopey, it just doesn't work. They both need to have each other. I think it works perfectly. And I'm excited for the show even more so after reading this.
I got, you know, to me, those, you know, when you're talking about, you know, Falcon and Winter Soldier, it's more about the story than it is them. Like, they're good characters. You give me a good story, you know, and then I'm, you know, I'm sold, right? They will never be really, I think, the driving force, you know, of a big MCU movie, but they're great. They're great secondary characters. And I think the show will do really well because because with it being episodic, I think, you know, there's the opportunity to tell just some really good stories. And then, you know, these guys are sort of, you know, the catalyst of moving that story forward, you know?
Yeah. I think the show, a show for them is perfect. And just because they can't carry a movie doesn't mean they don't necessarily warrant their own comic. That's obviously right. Totally different. A movie, like just something having any property, having a movie, a full length motion picture is just totally different. So,
yeah. So I'm excited, and I hope I don't know, you know, what the show is going to revolve around, but I do hope it's got sort of that Jason Bourne, you know, spy stuff, you know, feeling to it, because that's what was so great about, as I said before, about Winter Soldier was it had that spy thriller feel to it, and Robert Redford was fantastic. And really helped that along, but you had all those little, you know, those little nuggets you got throughout that movie that just really made it something fantastic. So I hope that the show is, you know, a little bit more of that.
I need a more badass, like Winter Soldier. I'm going to like the show. I'm going to watch it in its entirety. Well, I can't guarantee I'm going to like the show, if I'm a betting man, I will like the show. But I need more out of him. For the love of God, it's not because sad Bucky Barnes doesn't, he's not going to ruin a movie, or he could ruin the show, I guess, but he's never ruined a movie because he's just not prominent enough. But I feel like Civil War would have been so much better if there was that edge to him still. And let's see what happens now. Like, Steve's gone. Put your past behind you and try and make up for what he's like.
That's the thing about Civil War, though, is that he's still figuring shit out, you know? And, you know, could you imagine?
True.
Right. And so with the events of, you know, Infinity War and Endgame and, you know, we still, WandaVision's giving us just a little taste, but we still really don't know what the world is like post Endgame, you know, for a lot of these characters, right?
For especially, a lot of them. Yeah. Yeah.
And especially, so we have no idea, you know, how he's sort of come through all of those events, and he very well could, like you said, you know, he's, you know, him and Falcon, you know, they've got the shield now, you know, it's on them. So we very well could see a huge tone shift in their characters going forward. And the show will probably do that. We'll probably see that evolution, I would imagine and hope, you know, from episode 1 to 6, 7 or however long, you know, the series is going to be. Because yeah, we can't keep having, you know, mopey Winter Soldier. He's too badass for that. He offers too much.
Yeah, exactly. He's too dynamic of a character.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for it because I want to like it, but I am nervous. I just don't know what he's going to end up doing, and they can do it wrong. And there is a chance that if he did it wrong, then that we don't end up liking it as much. So anyways, but the book, it's the book that I talked about, 5 issues.
Yeah.
The trade is out now. It just came out. So I'm sure if it's not at your store, you can probably go ask them to order it and get it very easily. It's very much worth your time. Very fun read and a lot of good action. And
I'm going to have to read this.
Yeah. You're going to like it. Yeah. For 1,000%. All right. So nothing for the DSG book club this week. I know you guys are doing episode 11 for the Pineapple Boys. Actually, all the audio is up on PCP now, finally, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We got it all dropped the other day. So very, very happy about that. And so Billy and I will be on Thursday night at 8:30. I've heard it both ways. Season 1, episode 11 The name of the episode is, I think it's a fucking long one. Oops, he loves me. Oops, he doesn't love me. Oops, he's dead, or something to that. It's a really good episode. Can't wait to talk about it with my other quarterback, Billy Delaney.
Other quarterback? Yeah, you know what? Actually, I just remembered. I'm fucking pissed at you. I just remember because you didn't vote for me for the Change My Mind poll. You voted for friggin' Billy, and he's getting all this praises, like having by far the best theater. What the fuck's that about? Like, since when does Spider-Man not count for shit?
I'm going to tell you something. He beat you. He flat out beat you.
He did not. Oh, he's in the chat right now. He did not flat out beat me.
Sometimes you win, Nick. And no. You know, sometimes you're the best team in your conference. You get to the Super Bowl and you don't win.
No,
and that's not to say you got a bad theater. You just didn't win this one.
No, that's bullshit. The problem is that, guess what, everybody? Doc apparently doesn't have a fucking soul because he doesn't like The Notebook. I don't know how you don't like The Notebook. Like,
never seen it. Never plan on watching it.
How so? You're talking shit about it, and you don't even know if you like it or not. All this fucking time, you got to be kidding me.
Fun fact: I'm not a Rachel McAdams fan.
Really?
Really?
Oh, so that's why. Oh, so that's why you hate Wes's too, because he. I was pissed I didn't get Mean Girls. I thought I would get.
Well, Mean Girls is a good movie, though. Mean Girls is great, but Notebook, no. Get the fuck out of here with the Notebook.
You don't know that it's a bad movie. You haven't watched it yet.
Get the fuck out of here. I didn't say you had a bad theater, Nick. I just said I voted for Delaney because this theater is better.
You've called it a landslide. I will not sit here and let
you die. You guys got some doozies.
What it comes down to is that above all else, Doc appreciates yucks. That's it. Forget loyalty. If it makes him laugh, he's gonna side with that. That's how it comes down to. So we have our tie-in. We're planning on having our tie-in this week. I don't know now after all this bullshit. What's Billy saying in the chat now?
If you had Mean Girls over The Notebook, it would have been a much harder vote.
Well, I couldn't do that because we have categories. So it's the only thing I'm looking back on it now is maybe I shouldn't have picked Van Helsing, because if I'm trying to win the draft, people probably would have taken if I took that and took The Punisher instead. Then I think I would have won it, but
Van Helsing wasn't the swing there. I mean, Shaun of the Dead, Collateral, Anchorman. I mean, Anchorman alone, that movie is just I mean that right there, you probably won it for him, but you know he follows it up with Shaun of the Dead.
But again, laughs. That's all you want. It's just
it was a good year for laughs. It's the year 2004.
It was a good year for superheroes too. The Incredibles.
The Incredibles is a fantastic movie. If it's 2003 and you take Return of the King, you probably got it.
That's different. Yeah, that's right? Yeah.
You
well,
know
that's,
what I mean?
That's a big
hit. It's the year Billy just beat you to the punch on a couple.
You also don't like. You also not a big Harry Potter guy either. So that.
Well, I do enjoy Harry Potter, but it's not better than Lord of the Rings.
This is
and,
true.
And we debated that, and we won that. And yes, Saw. Right. So Saw. Yes, Billy had some bangers.
Yes. Saw. Well, I figured you hadn't seen Saw because you know you get scared.
Quick story about that. Mm-hmm. I was working at Best Buy at the time, and Saw 2 was coming out. And we were selling DVDs of Saw that if you bought the DVD, you get a free movie pass to go see Saw 2. So a bunch of the guys that I was working with were planning to go see Saw 2. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll go. Let me watch Saw 1 first. So I bought the movie.
Geez.
And I go back to my place. And I'm the only one there at the time. I watched it. And at the end, when that fucker sits up,
mm-hmm.
I got on my archaic flip phone at the time, texted my buddies and said, I'm out. And did true story.
That is
nope,
wait.
I'm done.
But you love reading horror books more than anybody, and that's why you're the best.
Yeah.
All right, Doc. Well, until next time, stay sexy.
You know it.